guys, it's episode 608 of All Time Top 10. Thank you so much to our good friend Jason Burke for coming back a week later to tape part two of Top 10 Autobiographical Songs. If you missed part one, please do yourself a favor and go back and find it at any of your favorite podcast players. In part two, we will feature picks 5 through 1 of some origin stories and songs about stuff that happened to these artists and bands. So check it out. Coming up next in part two, ATTT's Patreon is back, bringing you monthly emergency pods for just $5 a month. Shout out to our new and or returning Patreon members, Grant Duvall, Donald Fuller, and the enigmatic Elizabeth Eisen. Thank you guys for coming back to join us on Patreon. Patreon emergency pod number one with the great Joe Lavelle is up now. So go check it out at patreon.com/alltimetop10. While you're at it, come join the chat over on Facebook, as we're now having fun with you guys over at the ATTT Music Chat Group on the Facebooks. And speaking of Facebook and Instagram and Threads, thanks to everyone over there for giving us your votes and picks for the bonus track of the week, and in service of the grand unveiling of the Pantheon, the topmost of the popmost, the greatest songs we've ever heard, the ATTT 1000. Three more songs were revealed this week, including number 643, Jason Isbell, and 400 Unit, If We Were Vampires. I was asking you guys, who's the greatest rock and roll storyteller of the 21st century? Good picks here from you guys, Patty Griffin, Kendrick Lamar, Ryan Adams, Paul Kelly, and Jillian Welch. But we love Jason Isbell, the song If We Were Vampires. Our friend Steve Cunningham says, with the recent news, he's talking about the breakup of Jason Isbell and Amanda Shire, sadly. He said, with the recent news, I've been thinking about this again. It must be a bit of a mind fuck to go through a divorce and still have to sing songs about your ex every night until you die. I think Billy Joel could always phone that in, but Isbell doesn't do that. That's a good point. But we love If We Were Vampires anyway. And number 642, it's Peter Gabriel with The Book of Love. I was asking you guys, who's the ultimate rock and roll Peter? Good suggestions here. Pete Townsend, Peter Tosh, Pete Best, Pete Hamill of Vandergraaff Generator, Pete Yorn, Peter Frampton, Pete Ham, Peter Criss, Peter Tork, Peter Murphy, Peter Wolf, Pete Shelley, Peter Green, Pete Davidson, and Peter Pan. Thank you, guys. We love Peter Gabriel, of course. The Book of Love is the song. Our friend Kevin says, it's brilliant. Nick Arndt says, shout out to the original by the Magnetic Fields, whose frontman Stephen Merritt returned the favor by covering Gabriel's Not One of Us. Thank you. But yeah, we love The Book of Love from Peter Gabriel. And at number 641, it is Sarah McLachlan with Angel. I was asking you guys, what's your favorite tribute song? We did get a ton of these, so I'll just list off some here. Good picks from you guys. Alex Chilton by The Replacements, Back on the Chain Gang by The Pretenders, David Watts by The Kinks, Carl Perkins Cadillac by The Drive-By Truckers, Vince Gill with Go Rest High on That Mountain, KT Tunstall, Suddenly I See, Tyler Childers, Follow You to Virgie, George Harrison, All Those Years Ago, Vincent by Don McLean, Elvis Is Everywhere by Mojo Nixon and Skid Roper, Dio by Tenacious D, Alex by The Damn Truth, Ben Folds with Late, REM, Odd Fellows, Local 151, Brian Dewan with Cowboy Outlaw, Here Today by Paul McCartney, and of course, Candle in the Wind. But we love Angel from Sarah McLachlan. Shout out to Daryl McDaniels, aka DMC from Run DMC, who credits this song with saving his life. It's a wonderful story. You should look that up when you get a chance. Anyway, those three songs are now added to the ATTT 1000 playlist. Those are found at Spotify and YouTube. They're growing every week. Follow along, subscribe, whatever you do. Enjoy those, and keep coming back for some more picks coming up this week. All right, let's get into this episode, though. Let's wrap things up with Jason Burke, the mighty Jason Burke, and talk about some more autobiographical songs. Roll the tape.
F-bomb. I'm a jerk. I once had wealth, power, and the love of a beautiful woman. Now, I only have two things. My friends and... my thermos. Huh? My story? Okay. It was never easy for me. I was born a poor black child. I remember the days sitting on the porch with my family, singing and dancing down in Mississippi.
Top 10 Autobiographical Songs, Part 2.
First thing I remember knowing was a lonesome whistle blowing and a youngin's dream of growing up to ride on a freight train leaving town, not knowing where I'm bound, no one to change my mind. Mama tried. The one and only rebel child from a family meek and mild, my mama seemed to know what lay in store. Despite all my Sunday learning, with the bad I kept on turning till mama couldn't hold me anymore. And I turned 21 in prison, doing life without parole. No one could steer me right, but mama tried, mama tried, mama tried to raise me better. But her pleading I denied, that leaves only me to blame, cause mama tried.
And we're back. Hey, everybody. Thanks for waiting for us for a week. What'd you do when you went home? Did you like, go to work or do anything?
I cleaned the house, which meant I turned on the Roomba and then just watched it bump into stuff.
So you don't have a job. That's what you're saying. Lucky.
Just Roomba duty.
Just Roomba duty. Welcome back to the show, everyone. I'm here with the great Jason Burke.
Good to be back.
Yeah, man. Thanks for coming out and talking about our favorite autobiographical songs.
A lot of good storytelling.
Right? We'll get into the top half of our list in just a minute. Also, everyone listening to this, this is part two. If you haven't heard part one, go back and find it at all those places that you get your podcasts. Before we get into part two, got to do some plugging of some sort. There's never not something going on in the world of Jason Burke. Am I right?
That is correct. When do we see this dropping?
Late February, early March.
Okay, all right. March 29th, I'm going to be performing at the Redwood Bar and Grill in downtown Los Angeles.
It's becoming a cool place.
It really is. I know it's been there forever. It seemed to come out of nowhere. And there was a point, I think I played there like every other week, like four times or something. It was just, you know, I'd do a singer-songwriter Sunday night or Sunday afternoon, and then a Friday night I played synth in my friend's kind of like goth wave band. And
I've played there twice this month.
This month?
Yeah.
Yeah, it's amazing. It's a great spot, you know, downtown parking aside.
One of the shows was on a Sunday, so there's
That makes it a lot easier.
Yeah.
But no, it's a great spot. Good sound, good food, beer.
If you like a pirate theme too.
So I'll plug that, and I'll also plug the Los Angeles Breakfast Club, which is nearly century old. We're about to turn 99. A social club that is held at the Shrine of Friendship, an auditorium on Los Feliz Boulevard. Just off the 5, just outside Griffith Park. It's an amazing community. It has counted Walt Disney, Amelia Earhart, Calvin Coolidge, all people that have visited. Walt Disney was made an honorary member at some point. Louis B. Mayer was the president at some point. And in the last few years, it's really reemerged and reclaimed its identity as, you know, we say the history of the Breakfast Club is the history of L.A. because of how many important Angelenos have come through the club.
Is this invite only?
No, it is open to the public. Meetings are every Wednesday at 7 a.m. Yes. 7 a.m.
Oh.
Tickets are available at LABreakfastClub.com. You just have to get them by 48 hours in advance of that week's meeting. But we've got some great stuff coming up. We've got Disney legend Bob Gurr being initiated as an honorary member as part of a presentation about other Disney legend Raleigh Crump.
Hmm.
His son Chris Crump is going to be presenting next week.
I love LA for this reason.
Yeah, it's real, and you get a catered breakfast. We've got traditions. You get like a 40-minute presentation by a guest speaker. We had George Shakiris a couple years ago from West Side Story.
Nice.
We've got just some really amazing stuff coming up.
Excellent. Yeah, it's the LA Breakfast Club. Everyone, why does it have to be Wednesday though?
That's because it was started by businessmen before they'd go to work.
So you go there after being at the Kibitz till 2 a.m.?
Yep.
Jeez.
Yeah. Stay at the Kibitz till, you know, I try to leave around 1, get 4.5 hours of sleep or so.
Man, this is a bad deal.
And then,
you must really love
it. Well, the thing is, the club's over by 9.
Right.
So then I just go back to bed for a couple hours before going to work at 3.
Some of us have day jobs. Mm. Yeah, sadly. But that's awesome. And yeah, everyone come out to Cantor's on Tuesday night. You'll likely see Jason up there slinging the guitar. This guy knows every song ever written.
And the ones that I don't, I fake.
Yeah. Last time I got up there, I think we did I Want You, She's So Heavy. That was
fun.
Yep. It's a good time every Tuesday, everybody. Let's get back into our list, though, and let's talk some more autobiographical songs. Number 5 is yours. What do you got?
All right. We're bringing it to the turn of the century now.
Whoa.
We are going for Ben Folds 5 and their song Army.
Army! Oh, man. I didn't even think of this.
Yes, yes.
Great pick.
From the 1999 record, The Unauthorized Biography of Reinhold Messner. I believe Reinhold Messner was the first man to climb Everest without supplemental oxygen.
Is that what it is? I never knew that.
But the album has nothing to do with him. The name that apparently a lot of kids, when Ben was growing up, that's the name they would use on their fake ID. It's nice. Reinhold Messner.
That's great.
Because like, it sounds like a real name. It's not, you know, John Smith or something.
Yeah, yeah. Perfect.
But the song is basically telling the story of Ben.
It's so funny.
Like being kind of lost and aimless as, you know, a late teen, early 20 something, figuring out what he wants to do with his life.
Yeah. And the first line is the funniest thing ever.
Yeah.
I thought about the army. Dad said, son, you're fucking high.
as Ben Folds, has explained, this one's about my really horrible experience trying to get through college. And I got a scholarship and then I lost a scholarship after a semester because I flunked a class because I flunked one test. The class was based on one test, the one I flunked. I flunked the test because I got delivered to the test in a police car at 6 o'clock in the morning with stitches in my nose and stitches in my mouth. And I was still drunk and I had a broken hand, presumably because I had clocked that ass. I hit the wall. So I threw my drum set, which is the instrument that I flunked on. So this was, it was his juries. For anybody that hasn't gone to music school, your juries are, you've been studying your instrument all semester, and this is them seeing how well you've done, how much you've improved, have you learned what you need to know to the standards of the school at that point in your schooling.
Yeah.
So he was a drummer. He's studying,
a really good drummer.
He's a great drummer, and he was good enough that he was in music school for drumming.
And he did session work in Nashville as a drummer.
Yeah. A little bit, which he doesn't mention in this. But he says, I threw my drum set, which is the instrument that I flunked on, into Lake Osceola in the middle of University of Miami, and I took a Greyhound bus. I don't shit you. It was a Greyhound bus back home, and I worked with a bunch of old ladies in a grocery store for about 18 months. It was at that time that I decided in my bedroom, I decided while listening to Elvis Costello in 1986 that maybe I shouldn't wait tables and do this old lady job anymore. Maybe I should join the army. And for those of you who know the song from know the lyrics from the song, I derived them except for the rhyming part, which I set up myself. I derived it from the way it actually went down. My father knocked on the door. I'll just be dad for a second. Knock, knock, knock. Benjamin, what are you doing in there? Well, I was thinking about joining the army. You're fucking high. The him being in a band that broke up and then
reformed without
yeah, that is literally something that happened. They just, you know, they reformed without him and they got a different name.
Yeah,
so that it's like, oh no, we're not that band. We're
I nuked another grandma's apple pie and hung my head in shame.
Yeah. In this time of introspection, in the year of our election, I say to my reflection, God, please spare me more rejection. When they got back together for a one-off show at UNC Chapel Hill in 2008 for the MySpace front-to-back series, which they only ever did one episode, it was the whole conceit was a band will do one of their albums, start to finish, because that wasn't super popular at the time.
Yeah.
And they got Ben Folds Five back together. They did the whole unauthorized biography of Reinhold Messner record. And it's online. It's, you know, multicam, soundboard.
I'm sure they killed it.
It's great. They got a horn section for Army. But you can see Robert Sledge, the bass player, really, I feel like he really let out a little bit of frustration or catharsis. Just the look on his face when he steps up to the mic to say, God, please spare me more rejection. I feel like, you know, because the band broke up and Ben went on to have this amazing solo career.
I know.
Darren Jesse's released some wonderful music under the name Hotel Lights, but never hit the peak that Ben had.
Yeah, it's too bad. I didn't see a reason why they should break up, you know, because apparently they were all...
I think they were just burnt out. I have Ben's book. I've been meaning to read it. I think it was burnt out.
These first three Ben Folds solo albums easily could have been a Ben Folds final.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, and when they got back together in 2013, Landed was part of the set list. He was basically like, yeah, this would have been a Ben Folds 5 song.
100%. So,
yeah,
well, you hear, I mean,
it wasn't for him, it wasn't a vanity thing of like, don't forget I have a solo career. He was like, no, this works with us.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. The band that Ben had back then, the bass player and the drummer, were awesome too.
Yeah.
Amazing players.
He knew you just need piano, bass, drums. You know, being solo afforded him the ability to try out different sounds and use more guitar, you know, rock in the suburbs and all that.
Shout out to our friend Morris Brzezinski, host of the Love That Album podcast. Me and Shannon were on very recently to talk about Rock in the Suburbs.
It's an amazing record.
Yep.
But I think Robert Sledge to this day lives in the Chapel Hill area. We are Facebook friends.
Oh, sweet.
Seems like a lovely guy. Actually, Ben Folds Five just got back together for like two songs. The producer of the first three records, Caleb Southern, passed away. So they had all these bands that he had worked with, did a show at, it might have been Cat's Cradle.
Hmm.
Ben Folds Five did a song for The Dumped, and they did I forget what the other song was. It might have been Magic or something, like a, you know, a really lovely ballad, also from this record.
Mm-hmm.
But this is, you know, ironic that it was on the record that they basically broke up afterwards to be like, here's my story. Here's the origin of what led me to this.
I know, I can tell you for a fact that there are no listener picks for this song because if there were, I would have remembered it and put it on my list. I know that no one else thought of it, and I'm ashamed that I didn't think of it. It's perfect. Perfect pick. This is great. This is Ben Folds Five and Army number five.
Army.
Well, I thought about the Army. Dad said, son, you're fucking high. And I thought, thank you.
Yeah. More songs need vaudeville breaks in the middle. and Ben says he did grow a mustache, though he did not grow a mullet.
Oh, man. See?
So a couple disparities, but he said, you know, this is what happened.
It's a harrowing tale, everybody. Now it's a long way to the top, in a different direction, you know. But you still get to the top.
So. Yeah,
good job, Ben. Let's go to number 4, and here's a little bit from Rolling Stone magazine's list of the 100 greatest Bruce Springsteen songs.
I think we've got a steal.
Oh shit! Number 20 on their list is a song called 10th Avenue Freeze Out.
Yes.
Oh, this was next, huh? Or was it number 1?
No, it was next. But no, this is good. I've got extras. I can swap in.
Good, good, good. Okay. So even this is what it says in that Rolling Stone article. Even Springsteen can't explain what a 10th Avenue Freeze Out is. I still have no idea, he said with a chuckle in 2005, but it's important. Beyond the title, the song is about the formation of the E Street Band. The group had been named for only about a year by this point, but Springsteen was already creating a mythological narrative about when, quote, Scooter and the Big Man bust the city in half. The song also brought a new member aboard. Longtime friend Steven Van Zandt dropped by the studio while the tune was being recorded and helped craft a horn arrangement for it. Springsteen liked what he heard, and the E Street Band had a new guitarist. Bruce refers to himself here as Bad Scooter, which is indicated by the same initials, BS. And I think also people used to say somebody was a bad motor scooter.
Mm-hmm.
That's like, you know, as opposed to a different phrase. But yeah, he sings teardrops on the city, bad scooter searching for his groove. And then later on he sings, when the change was made uptown and the big man joined the band.
And when it's live, he says before that verse, now this is the important part.
Ah.
Like right before, this is the important part. Now the change was made uptown.
When the big man joined the band. From the coastline to the city, all the little pretties raised their hands. I'm going to sit right back easy and laugh when Scooter and the big man bust the city in half.
And Scooter and the big man are the only two featured on the Born to Run cover.
That's true. Scooter.
And as I think of it, I think that's the only time that somebody other than Bruce was featured on the cover of a Springsteen record.
Oh.
And I can't think of anybody better than
him. I mean, if it's going to be somebody.
Yeah, it's got Clarence, the big man himself.
Clarence Clemons. I love how when he sings that line, Clarence gives a little blast of...
That was the... You know, I saw him in 2009. It was Clarence's last tour. And it was... I mean, it was...
Was he sick?
I know he was having... At that point, he just had like his knees and hips replaced or something that. So he had a stool for a lot of it.
Yeah.
I don't know exactly what his issue was when he passed. I don't know if it was kidney failure, liver failure, something like that. But he was kind of, you know, on his way down. So I'm glad I got to see that.
Yeah,
My brother went to the first tour after he passed. And what they did for, I think, just that tour, the change was made uptown. The big man joined the band. The whole band would stop. Mm-hmm. And they would just put up a picture of Clarence.
Aww.
And just for like a minute, they would just, you know, put their photo, just, you know, the crowd would go nuts.
Right.
And then they'd go back into it. Now they still put up the picture, but they don't stop the song.
Right. I think I read that.
Yeah, this is the Steven Van Zandt, this is how the horns are supposed to go. Apparently his biggest contributions to the record were the horn arrangement.
Mm-hmm.
And...
For all the songs? Or?
No, just for the horn arrangement, specifically on 10th Avenue Freeze Out.
Oh, okay.
And the guitar line on Born to Run, because it was originally twangier.
Oh.
Bruce was going like, down, kind of bending up to all of it. And he was like, what are you doing? No, you have such a strong melody. Just play it. Just play the notes.
Don't add
and you can do like one little thing. And he was like, oh, yeah, that's much better.
Good job, Steven. Cool. Well, shall we? Shall we hear
it? Let's do it.
All right. 10th Avenue Freeze Out is the song. And big shout out to our friend Jeff, who requested this one. Thanks, Jeff. Number four.
Number four. 10th Avenue Freeze Out.
Avenue Freeze Out.
I don't know, but it's important. When I saw the E Street Band in 09, it was, I think Bruce had just turned like 60, and they did this, and nowadays it's not this kind of like nice little horn arrangement that like leads you into the song. It's starting like da 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 da, you know, the kick drum, da 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 da, and then he'll just keep it repeating and repeating and like whipping the crowd up until finally da da da, oh, pa, da, and like really, and it's, but when they hit that snare crack right before the main song kicks in, Springsteen like is holding the mic and he just throws himself back. And then you can see on the camera that he was grimacing a little bit. It's like, oh, and he was a little slower getting.
I bet he doesn't do that these days.
Not quite as much, you know. 15 years later.
Had money. I'd love to see Bruce Springsteen.
Yeah, it's coming like in like 6 weeks or something.
I know. I can't afford
that. Yeah, even I'm like,
oh my god. So one more autobiographical shout out to the big man, Clarence Clemons. This is from Song Facts. The big man in the third verse is Clarence Clemons. Springsteen met him in 1971 when Clemons came into a club called the Student Prince in Asbury Park, New Jersey, where Bruce was playing. It was a stormy night and the door flew off the hinges when Clemons opened it. Springsteen would talk about how he, quote, literally blew the door off the place. In Clemons' autobiography, Big Man, Real Life and Tall Tales, he explained, it was one of those nor'easters, cold, raining, lightning and thunder. Now this is God's honest truth. I opened the door to the club and a gust of wind blew the door right out of my hand and down the street. So here I am, a big black guy in Asbury Park with lightning flashing behind me. I said to Bruce, I want to sit in. He says, sure, anything you want. Clarence was working as a social worker at the time and playing in a Jersey Shore bar band when he got his big break with Bruce. I want to sit in.
I had heard that there was a point in the... A point in the 80s where he wanted more money.
Oh, shit.
Because he was like...
I'm the big man.
Basically, like Bruce was like, don't I pay you to play sax? And Clarence goes, yeah, but you don't pay me to be Clarence Clemons.
Oh, wow.
To be like, yeah, you can pay anybody to play sax. I'm Clarence Clemons.
That's actually a good point.
And yeah, the thing is like, he's not wrong. Like, he's the big man. He's not like one of the horn players.
Maybe you shouldn't have wrote about him like that, Bruce. Anyway, I love that one. What do you have next? Is number three, it's an alternate?
Yeah, so number three is my alternate. I went for No Surprise by Aerosmith.
Oh, I don't think I know this one too well.
So when they were making their album Night in the Ruts, which is one of the all-time great titles, but not one of the all-time great albums.
This is early 80s?
This was, I think, 78?
They're pretty burnt out at this point.
Joe Perry leaves, I think, during this record.
Oh, wow.
And then Brad Whitford leaves right after it. So the next record, Rock in a Hard Place, has Jimmy Crespo and Rick Dufay.
Whoa.
As the guitarists.
Pretty forgettable stuff, I'm guessing. No offense to those guys.
Yeah, it's I don't think I've listened to that record since, you know, in probably like 20 years or so. I got that they had this big, the Aerosmith Box of Fire, which was like all of the original Columbia studio records. Mm. So everything up to Rock in a Hard Place and then like Classics Live 1 and 2, but like Permanent Vacation and Pump and like all that, like that was all a different label. When they were making Night in the
Very
Ruts,
happy label.
Yes. Oh yeah. They're like, yeah, let's get you with professional songwriters. And I'm like, yeah, okay. Didn't need professional songwriters to write Sweet Emotion. But sure.
Yeah. Worked out for them just fine. Shout out to Desmond Child.
Oh yeah. Oh wow. Steven Tyler had been having trouble trying to write lyrics during the Night in the Ruts sessions. He worked on the song for 2 months until he finally got the idea to tell the story of how Aerosmith got their big break at a club in New York City. He was so excited by this breakthrough, he's since called the song his favorite. It's a pretty good song. The album is mixed, but it's a good track. It's rocking. It is kind of no bullshit. This is, you know, 1971, we all heard the starter's gun, but New York was such a pity. At Max's Kansas City, we won. We all shot the shit at the bar with Johnny O'Toole in a scar. Then old Clive Davis said he's surely going to make us a star.
Oh, wow. That's great.
Yeah, it's, you know, it really is.
Shout out to Clive Davis.
Him. Yeah, it's him.
I love that documentary about him, by the way. Did you see it?
No, I haven't seen it. I'll have to watch.
Just towering achievements.
Oh, God,
yeah. Him and Quincy Jones both. Like, you watch both those documentaries, and David Geffen has one, too. But, yeah.
Yeah, it's, I mean, Clive Davis, big enough that, you know, even in 77, you know, you could name drop him in a song, and it would mean something.
Yep.
So, yeah, it starts very specific, and then gets a little more on the trucking side of things, you know, riding on wheels of hell, smoking our axle grease. Oh, the backstage is rocking and we're copping from the local police. So nice. It's, you know, it becomes a little more coded as to like, oh, this is a reference to a thing that happened, but it is still literally, this is the story of Aerosmith.
Oh, it's so awesome. I don't know this one. Oh, this is great. All right. If it's his favorite song, he says.
Certainly one of them.
That's great. All right, what's it called again?
No Surprise with a Z.
All right, it's Aerosmith at number three.
Number three, No Surprise.
Johnny O'Toole and his scar. And then old Clive Davis said, and surely gonna
I mean, classic Aerosmith tropes, you know, going up like a minor third to get to the bridge. Great
bad
riffs.
Ass. Yeah. Yeah, it sounded like they hadn't lost a step there.
No, I mean, it's sort of like Army, that it's like, here's our origin right as we're ending.
Right. Yeah, it was 1979.
Joe Perry isn't in the video because he'd left the band by then.
There was a video?
There was a video for this. It's got Jimmy Crespo in the video.
Oh, no.
But it was the first track on the record. I think it was the first single.
But that is Joe Perry on the track.
Yes, it is Joe Perry. He's on every song on the record except for 3 Mile Smile, which... Well, he might be on it, but Jimmy Crespo was also on it, and he did co-write it.
Oh. So yeah, 79, Night in the Ruts. Looks like they also cover Remember Walking in the Sand.
They do, and that's pretty... I think it's the Aerosmith version that some people have used as a TikTok sound.
Really?
But you know, they do that sped-up version where it's like, oh no, oh no, oh no, no, no. Like that,
right.
You know,
they did the chipmunk thing too.
Because I've heard it too from the original version, but there's sometimes where the voice sounds a little different and a little raspier.
See, Mary Weiss just died, so
yeah.
You should play the Shangri-La's version, yeah. Please. Come on now. That's a great pick, though. Love that one. And just bring in Jason Burke, bringing stuff out to the pod that hasn't been heard before.
Ooh.
Like Brian's back. That was great. We got number two coming up next, and I'll be shocked if this isn't a steal as well. To me, this is the ultimate version of what we're talking about, and it's Creaky Alley.
That's a steal.
All right, you know what? I stole one already. We'll let you have this for number one. I'll pick something else.
You sure?
Yeah, because you already played an alternate, and I still like to play an alternate as well.
All right.
Yeah. So let's play Stay Free from The Clash.
Ooh.
Yeah, and I didn't even know this. I just was going through like Reddit threads looking for ideas, and sure enough, there's a story behind the song Stay Free, and this is from Reddit. Shout out to R Punk. Who's the author of this? Oh, I can't find it. Anyway, the story behind Stay Free by The Clash. This song was inspired by a classmate of Clash guitarist Mick Jones, a man named Robin Crocker. In an interview with The Guardian in 2008, Crocker explained, "Mick Jones and I sat together at a Strand Boys Grammar School in South London. We had a fight over who was better. I thought Chuck Berry, and he thought Bo Diddley. It was a hugely disciplinarian school. The headmaster used to have a wooden leg, so he got the nickname Hobbler. We were marched down to Hobbler's office to explain ourselves, and Mick said, 'We were arguing about rock and roll, sir.' Hobbler raged, 'Rock and roll is not on the curriculum in this establishment,' and was so furious that all this gob landed on his lapel. Me and Mick fell about laughing, and that was it. Firm friends at the end of any respect for authority ever. Mick had the longest hair and the tightest trousers in school. I was a hooligan basically because I was bored. After school, I was working as a journalist and got laid off. I fell in with a bunch of people and we decided to rob some banks. I ended up in the Old Bailey. It was like being back in Hobbler's office. I ended up in maximum security jail on the Isle of Wight. By the time I got out, Mick had formed The Clash. One evening, he came over with an acoustic and played me Stay Free. Somebody once said to me, 'It's the most outstanding heterosexual male-on-male love song.' And there's a lot of truth in that. It's a memento of a glorious band, a glorious time, and a glorious friendship. Unfortunately, I didn't stay free. I did a wages snatch in Stockholm and got banged up again. So it's about a friend of Mick Jones who decided to not stay free." But it's kind of like them growing up.
Yeah.
You know?
You know, I was actually surprised you didn't go for classic We Are The Clash.
Oh.
Which isn't so much an origin story, but it is sort of a mission statement. You know, we ain't going to be treated like trash. We got one thing. We are the Clash.
Oh, I love that.
But this, I think this makes more sense.
Yeah, we didn't really get into too many mission statements.
No.
Not like outward mission statements like that. Maybe that's a separate podcast. But anyway, yeah, Stay Free from the Clash. Number two.
Stay Free.
Stay Free. I love how that just, he wraps it all up. He says, because years have passed and things have changed, and I move any way I want to go, and I'll never forget the feeling I got when I heard that you'd got home, and I'll never forget the smile on my face because I knew where you would be, and if you're in the crowd tonight, have a drink on me, but go easy, step lightly, stay free.
It's a beautiful ending.
Yeah. I just wish you would have.
Very sentimental for punks.
Yeah, yeah. It's a love song.
Yeah, that's beautiful.
Between two buddies. All right, let's do number one. We know what this is.
Number one. This is Creaky Alley by the Mamas and the Papas.
Has to be number one.
It wouldn't make sense anywhere else on this list. Named for the club in the Virgin Islands where the members of the Mamas and the Papas had been staying for a while because. It was really cheap. I think there were, I don't know if they had legal problems in the States or, you know, on a tax exile. They took an extended vacation for a while in that way where it's just sort of implied like they needed to be in the Virgin Islands for a little bit.
Something was going down. The heat was on.
Yeah. But they were, helped out by friends down there. Hugh Duffy, the owner of the club, is name dropped in the song Duffy when they say Duffy's Good Vibrations and Our Imaginations Can't Go On Indefinitely because they were greasing on American Express cards, just building up a bunch of credit card debt so they could do this. This is not just the history of the Mamas and the Papas. This is also the history of the Lovin' Spoonful and also the Birds and also a little bit the new Christy Minstrels.
Right.
It's,
don't forget the Mugwumps.
The Mugwumps. Yeah, part of that history. It's a history of folk rock as we know it.
Yeah, and by the way, if you want to dig deeper into the lyrics of this song, there's actually a website, creakyalley.com.
I remember
explores everything about it.
Getting in trouble, show and tell day, second grade. I brought in sort of, because I was already at that point like a huge music nerd. I loved the Mamas and the Papas, and I was so like cool. 8. And I brought in these printed out things that like explained a lot of what was going on here, but wasn't really edited for kids, and I think my mom had a feeling like this might happen, so I remember her showing up right before show and tell, and I was like, well, that's weird. And there was definitely a point where I started to, like, you know, just reading off the page, you know, something about LSD, and yeah, we were all dropping acid at the time, we would put it on a sugar cube, and they're like, okay, well, Jason, thanks a lot, well, maybe we'll finish that some other time, who's next?
Oh, that's great.
Yeah, so
come on, McGuinn and McGuire.
McGuinn, yeah. So John and
just to get in higher.
John and Mitchie, John and Michelle Phillips, Zal and Denny, Zal Yanofsky of the Love and Spoonful, Denny Doherty of the Mamas and the Papas, in a coffee house. Sebastian Sat, John Sebastian. After every number, he'd pass the hat. McGuinn and McGuire, Roger or Jim McGuinn, depending on the time period. Roger McGuinn, to be of the Birds. Probably of the Birds, yeah, at this point, yeah. And Barry McGuire of the new Christy Minstrels before he broke off and did Eve of Destruction. They mentioned the Night Owl Cafe.
By the way, if you ever, we were just talking off the air about listening on headphones for stuff. If you've never heard the beginning of Mamas and Papas, California Dreamin', you hear just like 1/10 of a second of Barry McGuire's
yes.
vocal.
Like an octave down from the way we know, because they used the same track.
They used the same track, and somehow that part didn't get wiped.
Yeah, just a little bit of bleed from one of the tracks. I mean, when you're working, I guess 8 track at the time, but you got a lot of harmonies going on.
Yeah, you can really only hear it in headphones, but it's there. It's so clearly there.
Oh yeah, and the last member of the band to be mentioned in Creaky Alley's Mama Cass. They say. No one's getting fat except Mama Cass, a reference both to her weight, which is something that publicly she wasn't shy about. You know, yeah. She wasn't pretending like she wasn't overweight. This is who I am, and she owned it and she wore it and was so funny and beautiful and full of life.
Yep. Yeah, I've read stories about her being sort of like the epicenter of the Laurel Canyon scene.
Her place was the nucleus. It was, you know, her that brought together Crosby, Stills, and Nash.
Right.
You know, calling up, you know, Crosby and Stills were like hanging at her place working on a song. And she's like, I've got an idea. Knows the Hollies are in town. Calls the Hollies Hotel. Finds Nash. Says, hey, I'm going to like be out front in half an hour. I'm going to pick you up. Picks him up. Brings him to her house, says, all right, you two, play that song again. And they play it, and then she's okay. Nash goes, wait, okay, play it again. They play it a second time. Okay, play it one more time. They play it a third time. He adds his harmony. Oh, the song is You Don't Have to Cry.
That must have been a moment. Oh, my God.
Yeah, just like, boom, there. Cool, got it. Here's what we're going to do now. This is it.
This is a 40-50 year career.
Yeah, and it's because of Mama Cass. So you know nobody's getting fat except Mama Cass.
Yep.
Referring initially to her weight, but then everybody's getting fat except Mama Cass. Was that, you know, the other groups were starting to actually take off a little bit,
right.
Gain some. The Lovin' Spoonful was really doing well. The Birds were a smash hit.
Yep.
And the Mamas and the Papas weren't quite there yet. But California Dreamin' is becoming a reality.
That's the last bit. I read that John Phillips wrote this song to tell Lou Adler who is who in the band's history.
Which I think makes sense, except it was on like their third album.
Yeah, but he was, you know.
And Lou Adler, I mean, it's a cute story for sure.
It's a cute thing to say, yeah.
But I feel like if he didn't know who they were by the time he signed them and, you know, had them and produced, if you can believe your eyes and ears, by the third record.
Yeah.
Like, no, Lou Adler funny. Knows who the Love and Spoonful is by, you know, 1967. Yeah.
I know. It's cute, though. Yeah. I like it. Shall we?
We shall.
All right. Creaky Alley is number one, as it should be. And big shout out to our friends Joe, Adam, Kevin, and Shannon. They say Creaky Alley. Number one.
Number one. Creaky Alley.
Don't you work as hard as you play. Make up, break up, everything you shake up. Yes, it had to be that way. Sebastian and Zoll form a spoonful. Shelton again, getting very tuneful. McGuinn and Maguire just a catching fire in L.A. You know where that's at. And everybody's getting fat except Mama Cat.
Mugwumps, what was it?
Mugwumps, high jumps, slow slumps, big bumps. Don't you work as hard as you pay? Oh, yeah, as hard as you play.
When Cass was a sophomore planned to go to Swarthmore.
Which I think that's the only thing that wasn't true. I don't think she was planning on going to Swarthmore.
Well, she didn't. Yeah. Either way.
Yeah.
It is true, though, that when Denny met Cass, he gave her love bumps.
Yes, that is. That is true. Oh, she moved to DC to attend American University, not Swarthmore.
Oh, but she was a sophomore.
But yeah, Cass was not planned to go to American University, but she changed. Yeah,
doesn't work.
Like to get to work Swarthmore into a song and rhyme it with sophomore. Like that's the fact that this song. Did as well as it did. It was
number five
in the U.S., number one in Canada, even internationally, number 19 in South Africa, number 16 in New Zealand.
It's that whole like very specific thing becomes universal.
Yeah, it's people, and you know at this point the Mamas and the Papas were one of the few bands I feel where. Every member was sort of a character the way that, like, the Beatles were.
Yeah, The Who was one of those, too.
Yeah, the Who, absolutely. You knew who all the members of The Who were.
Yeah.
I don't know all the members of The Animals.
Right.
I know Alan Price. I know Eric Burdon. I know Chaz Chandler. I really only know Chaz Chandler because he went on to manage Hendrix.
I don't know all the members of The Zombies. I know, you know, Rod Argent.
Argent, and Blundstone.
That's about it.
Chris White, Hugh Grundy, and Paul Atkinson, was the guitar player.
But you're you.
But it's true. That is true. I mean, but that a song that was this specific and about such a regional music scene, such an American art form,
right,
was internationally known, and it's so niche.
Yep.
But everybody was like, yeah, because we know who these people are and we love them.
Yeah, and what a crazy, I didn't want to say flash in the pan, but it was just like over before it started. You know, they were only together for 4 years.
About, and you know, the early success was really, you know, kind of the first, I think the last 60, big single was like 1230, mm-hmm. and that was 1967. Yeah. They were putting out records more frequently back then. So, you know, they get, you know, a good number of almost two a year or so, or, you know, one every,
thankfully.
Yeah. Every 15 months or something like that.
Thankfully that was the standard back then. But,
well, there's some bands that now, even if they're putting out one every 2 years, because we're so used to a slower pace again.
Yeah.
It's like, wait, no, like Dawes will put out I love Dawes. They put out a record every two years. And I'm like, I'm just really absorbing this last one. And now you've got Ryan Adams has put out like four this year. And by this year, I mean 2024.
It's still February.
Yeah. We're 6 weeks in. He's four records in.
Oh my God.
So every so often there's somebody like that. You know, on the other end of the spectrum of like being a good person, our friend Fernando I think four records a year. He's always putting out stuff. He's doing very
four records
prolific.
A month.
Meanwhile, Vampire Weekend just put out, or they're about to put out their first record in 5 years, I think.
Hmm.
I'm very excited, but it feels like, cool, yeah, we've made it all the way through the last era of this band, to co-opt a term from Taylor Swift, this last era, and now we're moving into
the... She puts out albums like once every 2 years? It actually got more frequently.
Well, it's been more frequent. Well, she's got the re-records, which is also which she has to put in the time and effort to do, but she also, yeah, I think it feels like a new record every... 18 months, right. I think, of new material.
It's pretty consistent.
Yeah.
She needs to do an autobiographical song, an origin story song.
I mean, the thing is, every time I say to my girlfriend or my roommate who are big Swifties, like, I wish she'd do a song that kind of addressed this aspect of her life. They're like, actually, she did on Midnights. It's this track, and these are the specific lyrics.
She does she doesn't do an origin story song, but she does lots of autobiographical stuff. Lots of it. So, okay. It's fair enough. What are we talking about? We're talking about Taylor Swift.
And that was one of the reasons I was like, I want these songs to really kind of be origin stories and not just like a true thing that happened.
Yeah, I think we can accomplish that.
Yeah. Otherwise, we get all the blood on the tracks as well.
Yeah, there's a lot there. Anyway, thanks so much. Jason Burke, everybody. Great list.
Thank you. Thank you for having me. This was super fun. I'm glad we got to do this topic.
Well, we have a little more to get to because it's... going to be honorable mention time in just a minute, but right now it is time for the bonus track of the week for part two, another song selected by our friends on social media. Check it out.
As chosen by our listeners on social media, here's the bonus track of the week.
Hey everybody, it's time for the listener pick bonus track of the week selected by our friends on Facebook, Instagram, and Threads. All right. Thanks everyone for all your picks and your votes. Thanks to the great Jason Burke for coming through for us once again. Well, we have one more autobiographical song to play for you guys, and these are the ones you guys were voting on social media. We had Deep Purple with Smoke on the Water. We had The Beatles with The Ballad of John and Yoko. Coming in second place once again, it's Merle Haggard with Mama Tried. But the winner this week, it's Joan Baez, Diamonds and Rust, from her 1975 album, Diamonds and Rust. And here's a little bit from Wikipedia about this song. In the song, Baez recounts an out-of-the-blue phone call from an old lover, which sends her a decade back in time to a crummy hotel in Greenwich Village about 1964 or 1965. She recalls giving him a pair of cufflinks and surmises that memories bring diamonds and rust. Baez has stated that the lyrics refer to her relationship with Bob Dylan. And, yeah, he's calling her up in the lyrics, and she's not having the reaction that he may want when he's calling her 10 years later. She says, "Well, you burst onto the scene, already a legend, the unwashed phenomenon, the original vagabond. You strayed into my arms and there you stayed, temporarily lost at sea. The Madonna was yours for free. Yes, the girl on the half shell could keep you unharmed." And she's not too happy with Bob in this song, I'm guessing. And it's pretty striking stuff. I love it. So let's listen to Diamonds and Rust from Joan Baez. And our friends Shirley and Lisa were the ones that voted for this, or that picked it, and then everyone else that voted for it. Thank you as well. Let's hear it, the bonus track of the week.
Listener pick. And here I sit, and on the telephone, hearing a voice I'd known a couple of light years ago, heading straight for a fall. As I
the girl on the half shell could keep you unharmed. Now I see you standing with brown leaves falling all around and snow in your hair. Now you're smiling out the window of that crummy hotel over Washington Square. Our breath comes out white clouds mingles and hangs.
It is the bonus track. Thanks everybody who made picks and everybody that voted. You guys are the best. All right, Jason, honorable mentions. What do you got?
So the ones that I had sort of as alternates, I had the Ballad of Them.
Oh yeah,
by them, Loretta Lynn, Coal Miner's Daughter.
The Ballad of Them is way too long though.
Yeah. But you know,
to the point.
Yeah. We don't need everything.
Yeah, it's fun though, and yeah, Coal Miner's Daughter.
Then, sort of on the little bit fictional side, we have "They Got Lost" by They Might Be Giants, which is just about a fictional time that they got lost on the way to a show. And then I even had a separate list that if I felt like we might actually get more into the mission statement side of things, or just go, because I know initially you'd mentioned, I forget which one you'd mentioned that I was like, I feel like that one's kind of fictional, but it doesn't matter, because...
Is it Formed a Band by Art Brut?
I might have been...
Because that one doesn't... Yeah. I listened back to that. I was like, okay, that doesn't
But I
count.
Had, like, Theme from the Monkees. I did have We Are the Clash as, like, maybe.
Yeah.
Wilco the Song from Wilco the Album doesn't by Wilco the Band. But it's just like, hey, how's everybody doing? We're Wilco, and we love you.
Yeah.
Like, but it's not even the mission statement Wilco. Of what Wilco really is.
Wilco will love you, baby.
And then Jaco Homo by Devo.
Right.
Which it's fictional because it's in the, you know, the lore of what Devo is and the theory of de-evolution.
Right.
They tell us that we lost our tails evolving up from little snails. I say that's all just wind and sails. Are we not men? We are Devo.
Right.
But it's, you know, it's not true, but it is very much like, we have a song that is sort of our whole deal.
It's a mission statement song. Yeah. Jaco Homo. That song's crazy.
What are your...
Shout out to 7/8 time, or 13/8 time, whatever it is. I had Alive from Pearl Jam.
Mm-hmm.
That whole, sorry, you didn't know your dad was dying. You know, who you thought was your daddy. Yeah. That whole story is true, apparently. That's Eddie Vedder's origin story. Yeah. And Merle Haggard with Mama Tried.
Yes. Also covered by the Dead.
Oh, yeah. I can see that.
Yeah. In a couple, they have like a disco version as well as a more country version.
Nice. Yeah. I turned 21 in prison, doing life without parole. No one could steer me right, but Mama Tried. Coal Miner's Daughter. I had Brooklyn Roads from Neil Diamond.
Ooh.
A lot of people said I Am I Said, but that's not, there's no real autobiographical stuff there. He's just,
even if it's personal, like, yeah, that doesn't feel like this is the song about Neil Diamond,
right? I mean, it is, but it's like fictional.
Yeah,
more. Piano Man, of course. The Entertainer also could work for Billy Joel. And then I had a few that had just like specific scenes in people's lives that were real. Diamonds and Rust from Joan Baez. The flip side of that, Tangled Up in Blue. And Fire and Rain from James Taylor.
Yeah.
Flying Machines in Pieces on the Ground. That was the band he was in, you know.
Carolina in My Mind also references, you know, his feelings of isolation and homesickness. It was the holy host of others standing round me. That was reference to the Beatles.
Oh.
Similar to in what's the Monkees song?
Randy Scousgit.
Randy Scousgit, the Four Kings of EMI.
Yeah, and that was based on the true story too. Like a party they were at with the Beatles, and everybody was there. Yeah, same with Garden Party. I guess I just don't like that song.
It's not great. I did have to play it for a gig, and there's some interesting like change, like just musically there were a couple things where I was like, oh, okay, there's more chords than you think there are, and so it gave me a little. And I mean, I'm a music teacher for my day job, and often a student will come in with a song that neither of us wants to learn, but they have to for a show that they're in. So I feel like it served me well to be able to find something in a song that I don't like. That's at least interesting. We had to learn Sweet Child of Mine. We had to learn the bass part.
That's fun.
I don't like Axl Rose's voice.
Yeah.
I think it's a cool song. I don't like his voice, so I don't like listening to the song. You have to listen to the song to learn the part. But Duff McKagan's got a really nice bass part. It's very melodic. I was like, oh, he's like a really good bass player. Yeah. Like, I know he was, you know, he was the bass player in the band, and the band was enormous, but I didn't really... You know,
he's solid.
Until I, you know, isolated that, wasn't really sure of like what is Duff McKagan as a player that sets him apart from, you know, like, is he just doing roots and fits? No, he's doing this really tasteful part.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, for Garden Party, I'm like, it's a dumb song. And it's one of those like, we're going to put a lot of, Yoko brought her walrus. Oh, what could that possibly refer to?
Right.
But.
Walrus was Paul anyway.
Changing the chords around and just sort of getting into just on a structural level what that song was.
I'm you're a glass half full
kind of
guy.
Okay, yeah, that's. So.
Right, you're a glass half full.
I think I'm pretty optimistic. I like to look for the good in things.
There you go. I mean, you teach music for a living. How cool is that?
I do. I'm very fortunate. It's wonderful to mold minds.
Talented, everybody. go see him at the Redwood Bar March 21st?
29th.
Okay, so yeah. Hopefully this will be out by then.
Yeah.
Go see him at the Kibitz and go join the LA Breakfast. Why does it have to be Wednesday morning?
Wednesday, because that's what it's been for 99 God. Years.
I work at 8 a.m. Wednesday morning. Can't do it.
Yeah.
But for those who are available, go check it out. Yeah,
LABreakfastClub.com.
There you go. Thanks so much, man. This has been great.
Thanks for having me. This has been a blast.
Absolutely. Everyone, find out more about what Jason's up to. Your website?
JasonBurkeMusic.com.
I figured that was it, but I didn't want to assume.
And it's B-E-R-K.
That's right.
For Burke, the correct way.
Yeah, and find him on the socials, you know, Instagram.
Yeah, if you just look up Jason Burke Music, Twitter, Instagram.
I'll post the link to all that stuff.
I'm around. I'm ubiquitous. I try to be.
He's ubiquitous, at least. Thanks so much, man. Thanks, everyone, for listening. If you like what you hear, make sure you subscribe to this show by finding us at all the places that you get podcasts. And we're on social media at all the places. Threads is kind of blowing up. I don't know about you. Are you on Threads?
Not on Threads. I'm trying to... I'd rather be on fewer ones than I'm already on.
I understand that. But I left Twitter and I wanted something where, you know, if you're interested in any of my, you know, views on stuff, you can find it there. You know, I'm not crazy active in that realm, but, you know, I will, you know, have a thing or two to say about stuff. But the polls, we do these music polls, and they're blowing up over there. One had like 500 votes or something. Wow. So yeah, Threads is happening, everyone. Go join us over there. And we appreciate it. Thanks everyone for listening. We'll be back next week with some more fun stuff. Thanks everyone for listening, and until next time, peace out. Say goodbye, Jason.
Goodbye, Jason.
Peace out.
Just Roomba duty.